This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hello there, listeners. Jennifer here, and I hope you are enjoying your time between our current seasons of Art Curious. As promised, I am popping back in your feed this month, March 2022, with a couple of interviews that I had the pleasure of recording recently. Today's conversation features Claudia Fontaine Chittister, whose new book, Trusted Eye, Post-World War II Adventures of a Fearless Art Advocate, is available now. Trusted Eye is a compelling narrative of an American wife and mother finding her place amid the rubble of war-torn Germany. Virginia Fontaine fought continually for recognition as a woman, a photographer, an art curator, and perhaps most importantly, a liaison between beleaguered German artists and the outside world. Through journals, letters, and photographs, she recorded her uniquely intimate perspective on this period amid an ever-changing constellation of artists and friends. Fontaine documented her life from a young age, including her struggles at Yale Art School, her year as a newlywed in the British Virgin Islands, and her employment in a munitions factory. Later, she helped the Jewish underground in Europe, traveled with gallerists throughout Germany, Switzerland, and France, tangled with the Monuments Men, and experienced the international reach of Senator Joseph McCarthy's anti-communist pursuits. Essays in this book include ones by art experts Graham Reed and Dorothea Schön, and they illuminate Fontaine's early years in Milwaukee and her impact on German art culture in the early post-war years. So Trusted Eye is both a biography and a visual almanac for an intricate slice of the 20th century. Now, here's a little bit of background on the author, Claudia Fontaine Chittister. She was born in Frankfurt, Germany in 1956 at the height of the Cold War. She earned her degree in art history from Wellesley College and pursued her passion for art research while working at the Smith College Library. Later, she earned a master's degree in library and information science from the University of Texas at Austin. Chittister founded the Fontaine Archive, which has collected and organized her parents' rich store of materials and is really designed to make available these letters, photographs, and diaries of Virginia Fontaine and the art of Paul Fontaine. The Archive's first publication, Work Standing Up, The Life and Art of Paul Fontaine, from 2013, won the 2014 IBPA Benjamin Franklin Silver Award for Design. In the show notes and blog post for today's episode, I'll go ahead and include a link so that you can order your very own copy of Trusted Eye, which, trust me, is a gorgeous coffee table book and so much more. So if you love modernism, if you love European post-war art, you will love this one. So now, on to my conversation with Claudia, who joined me via Zoom. Claudia, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure.
I really loved receiving this book, and I want to start beginning with you telling us a little bit about the background on this project. So how did Trusted Eye come about?
So I have been working with my mother's letters and diaries and her guest books for over 20 years. In 1996, when my father passed away, I was literally handed this large photo album with photographs of her time in Germany post-World War II, and also her diaries from 51 and 52, and letters from as early back as the 1930s when she attended Yale University. And I didn't know where to start, so I would start reading the letters. And finally, I hired an intern from the University of Texas to help organize, an actual archivist. And we started working with that. And then I started posting things on the internet, created an archive, fontaine.org. And people would find me who were actually researching this time period of post-World War II Germany. And I thought, well, this is interesting. So encouraged me to actually index and scan and do more with it, never thinking it was going to come up into a book until only 2017. My sister and I were in Milwaukee for happenstance for a show for our great-grandfather, Paul Hammersmith, who's a well-known etcher from that area. And I'm in Austin, by the way, so it's not often that I get to Milwaukee. We had a day off, and we went to the Milwaukee Public Library, because I'm a librarian by trade. And I thought this is a beautiful example of Gilded Age work. And there was an art show there called Wisconsin Women Artists. There was a painting, Virginia Hammersmith, 1939. And my cousin yelled across the room, said, "Is there another Virginia Hammersmith that paints in Wisconsin?" And sure enough, there was a painting from her last year at Yale. And it was the impetus for me to actually finally put this together as a book, where we not only, because books have been written using her materials, but not the whole story as to her background in Wisconsin, who her great grandfather, who her grandfather was, and his lineage coming all the way from Germany over in the 1840s from Germany to Wisconsin. So I wanted to give a full story of all the things and all of her trials up and down. So that's sort of how it came about.
I love that story so much because it just feels like one of those lost and found moments. Because when I first was starting to read the book, I thought maybe you had already known about this exhibition on Wisconsin women artists. And then I learned very quickly that, no, this was a surprise to you to find your mother's work on the wall. Is that correct?
Absolute surprise. Absolute surprise. And I had seen sketches of this painting in the portfolios that we have here in the archive. So the composition I recognized immediately. And then I also, in her letter, she talks about writing about the flood is what the painting is called, and being, you know, the critique that she would get and how her professor liked it. But the fact that her final year, they did not pass her final painting class after 4 years of work. She had a choice at that point. Well, she didn't have a choice because it was the 30s. It was the Depression. And her parents decided that maybe she wasn't a serious artist and they did not fund her to continue. It's a 5-year program at Yale. And so we usually think of universities at 4 years, but it was a 5-year program. And she stayed home for that entire year and continued painting. So whether she did this painting at Yale, which is my assumption because it's so finished, but the work that she was doing for that year that she had off waiting for my father to graduate is when she, you know, she did galleries, she worked in studio, she tried to get a job as an illustrator for another person's book. So she worked hard at trying to be an artist at that point. But then she got married and things changed.
So her experience at Yale, obviously it didn't go quite to plan. How did that experience shape her of not being able to continue that program? How did it fit into her future? Because obviously she didn't have the best time at the end there.
Right. Well, I think in her heart, she really did want to continue painting because even in their Yale, I mean, in the beginning, I think she was mad. Everybody was mad, but she intended to keep going. But when they went to Tortola, they had a year in Tortola, British Virgin Islands, after marrying, because Yale had given my father a scholarship to go anywhere in the world, actually. And the war had broken out in Europe, so he decided to go to the British Virgin Islands, where it was a relatively unpainted island, Tortola. And there she thought she could continue painting as well, but they were in a thatched roof shack, and the thatch would fall down on the oil. So neither my father or mother could paint in oils, but my father was already an accomplished watercolorist, so he continued doing watercolors. My mother couldn't. Mother was also a portrait painter, more than anything, and the locals wouldn't sit for her, and they wouldn't let her photograph them either. So she was in a quandary and ended up having just, well, I guess I'll just write. So she wrote about her experiences and later gave lectures about what Tortola was like, and that sort of sent her down the avenue. And she took up photography, especially in Europe, and because she also had access to all the things that could help their dark room. She had film, she had a camera, she had ways of getting around. So that became her mode of expression.
That's wonderful. Tell us a little bit about how they ended up in Germany. So your father was in the military during the war, is that correct?
Correct. He was in the Corps of Engineers as they would build and break bridges. Mostly he did maps because he's a designer. But after the war, there was 3 years in the war, and there weren't enough boats to come back. He was planning on coming right back. But it was a lottery system to get back. And after 6 months, he decided, he wrote my mother, so I think I'll get a job. And so he got a job with the armed forces and as a designer, because they needed designers to help with all the publications to help re-educate, supposed quote unquote, re-educate the Germans. So he just sent a telegram to my mother, says, why don't you come over? It'll be 6 months and then I will come back. But that ended up being 25 years because he really made a place for himself there as an artist. And my mother found her place there as well. So that was is one of those things. Mother had a very adventurous spirit. My father did too. And she spoke some German. She had taken German classes, having grown up in Wisconsin, and her great grandparents speaking only German. So although she did say she flunked the class in high school and college, but my father spoke French and he communicated with the artists with French, and which is really interesting, especially Willy Baumeister. So this experience was, it worked, their particular skill set was actually a good combination.
We are going to take a quick break, so please support us by continuing to listen and supporting our sponsors, and we will be right back. I require a few things to get myself started in the morning. I need a little bit of quiet time to myself, a nice hot cup of coffee, and a shot of Magic Mind. But okay, so what is Magic Mind, you ask? It is this little elixir that's designed to provide sustainable energy and focus, but it doesn't have the jitters and crashes that you might expect after you have one too many cups of coffee. I drink one small shot of this productivity drink that's filled with brain-boosting ingredients, and it leaves me feeling clear-headed and ready to hustle. Magic Mind contains 12 functional ingredients, including matcha, which is one of my favorites, alongside nootropics that can help you focus, and adaptogens that help you ward off stress. Magic Mind was created by James Bashara, a Silicon Valley entrepreneur who has transformed this little shot into the Valley's must-have morning elixir. And I get the hype because I feel better when I start my day with Magic Mind. If you're a creator like me and you need that little extra productivity and focus, and you're looking for an easier way to get into that flow state, you should try Magic Mind. And you've got nothing to lose. With their money-back guarantee, any first purchase will be refunded, no questions asked, if it doesn't meet your expectations. So try it today. Go to magicmind.co/artcurious and use discount code ARTCURIOUS to get 20% off today. Magic Mind is your best choice when it comes to getting more done in less time through your once daily magic elixir. Go to magicmind.co/artcurious and use code ARTCURIOUS at checkout to get 20% off your first purchase. If saving more and spending less is one of your top goals for 2022, then why are you still paying insane amounts of money every month for wireless? Switching to Mint Mobile is the easiest way to save this year. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you maximize your savings with plans starting at just $15 a month. All plans come with unlimited text and talk and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Plus, you can choose the amount of monthly data that's right for you and stop paying for data that you never use. By going online and eliminating the traditional costs of retail, Mint Mobile passes significant savings on to you. So how's that for an easy way to make good on your savings resolutions this year? To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get that plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/artcurious. That's mintmobile.com/artcurious. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/artcurious. You're successful in business because you love doing the research, whether it's the state of the market or the next right hire. But when you're low on hours and you still want to do a great job on hiring, who do you go to for help? It's time for Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you are guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. You can find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you will get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them all to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. One of the things I love about Indeed is their amazing Instant Match tool. With Instant Match, over 90% of employers get quality candidates as soon as they sponsor their job post, according to Indeed data. Candidates you invite to apply through Instant Match are then 3 times more likely to apply to your job than the candidates who only see it in the search. So start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/art. Offer is valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/art to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/art. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. So paint the picture for us. This is post-war Germany by the time she comes over there. What was the experience like for her? I'm thinking specifically about the challenges that she must have experienced because thinking about an American living in post-war Germany, but especially being a woman in post-war Germany, what was her daily life like, especially in those early years?
It's interesting because I was doing some research about thinking, you know, when were they allowed to come over? Because at first they weren't, and it had to be something they realized that the armed forces needed to have women around and wives were invited over. So it was a desperate, desperate time. Food was a shortage of food. Everyone was being rationed in the very early days. Mother became proficient at the black market. She'd go and there'd be a lot of trading going on. And I think she learned her marketing skills when she was in Tortola, actually. And she writes about it, and she's not very maudlin or morbid about it, but every once in a while she'll say, you know, the smell was still there about the decay. It was just, and it was solid rubble. The photographs that she took of Frankfurt, for instance, of the bombed out cathedral, it's in the book. And yeah. You just get a sense of just, that's after a couple of years of already being there.
Oh, wow.
And it took years to actually clean it up. And they would use the prisoners, POWs, to help with the cleanup. But, you know, if you think about no electricity, no water, no plumbing, the little infrastructure that there was, they were in barracks. The German army barracks is where the army put all the families. And they were behind barbed wire. So it was a very dangerous time. And because people are hungry. But mother, you know, scooted around, and she became friends. She with the monuments men in the Wiesbaden Museum. Wiesbaden Museum was one of the main collecting points for the art that the Nazis had stolen and yes. were bringing back. And so that's one place that she, you know, was friends, and she became friends with the other wives of other officers. And so she quickly developed a community. And the Wiesbaden Museum, the Captain Edith Standen, who's considered one of the monuments men, she directed my mother to visit this woman, Hannah Becker, who's an art collector. His mother asked, well, where can I go to meet other collectors?
I love that. And actually, before we get to that segment where she starts becoming more of the arts advocate that you're talking about, I want to talk about one of my favorite segments is the chapter where you write about her work with the Jewish underground. That was really exciting. Could you tell us a little bit about that as well?
It's really fascinating because it's not one of the stories that we ever heard. I was born much later. I was born when mother was already 41. So her life is much earlier. I only discovered this in the archive in a lecture that she had wrote out the notes for. And I said, oh my goodness. And so I spent an entire year trying to validate. What she said was that she and my father would run money down to Switzerland and would help the refugees go from all over Europe down to get to the Mediterranean. The armed forces was not supposed to officially be helping them do that, but the army and many people were. So, and she and my father, I don't know how many times they did it. I've asked other people, nobody seems to know what I'm talking about. But she said, then she read in a newspaper that a woman sergeant was found with $50,000 on her in a train and was sent back to the States.
Oh wow!
So that scared my mother and said, "Well, you know, I'm not gonna risk everything at this point." So she ended up stopping that. But that was a rabbit hole of research that I just really found riveting. I read almost an entire year's worth of Stars and Stripes looking for that particular detail, but I found all the other crime that was happening and how much the the black market was working in order to fund the movement of the refugees. It was a very tragic time. And
I can only imagine. So, oh my goodness. What was that one of your favorite things that you learned about your family while you were writing this book?
It was, because I was proud of it. I am proud of it.
Absolutely.
But I also found things that I forgot about, but I was reading some more notes about my great grandfather, the printer, the artist, was also a banker. And I always heard about that, but I wasn't familiar with it. But I read articles in the Milwaukee Sentinel about that he was indicted. Well, it wasn't indicted. He was put to trial because his boss had stolen money from the bank.
Oh, wow.
By letting his wife take a loan out under her maiden name. So at some ridiculous rate, and this is in the 20s. So I thought, oh my goodness, my great grandfather got in trouble with the law. that was never, ever said anywhere also. So these are the stories, things that I came across that I was, that really eye opener.
There's more to our conversation that you won't want to miss. So come right back after this message. My kiddo is wonderfully curious. He's always asking incredible questions about the world around him, like how do caterpillars turn into butterflies? Why is the day getting longer? And why is it getting warmer now? Spring brings along new curiosities and a chance for kids to connect with the world around them. There are so many incredible opportunities to learn, and it's the perfect time for discoveries. And with a KiwiCo subscription, kids can discover the engineering and mechanics behind everyday objects, the science and chemistry of cooking, geography and culture from new places, and brand new art and design techniques, all through seriously fun, hands-on projects where they and you can learn about a new STEAM topic every month, ranging from rainbows to rocket ships and everything in between. Discover subscription lines for kids of all ages, ranging from infants and preschoolers all the way up to teens. And grown-ups are also welcome to join in on the fun. My son and I both enjoyed receiving his very first Kiwi crate recently. We got exactly what we wanted, which was the Atlas crate, full of immersive, hands-on, high-quality activities that help us explore and appreciate world cultures, which is perfect for my little traveler. This month, we learned about India, made our own mandalas, and blended up our own mango lassis, and we loved every moment. And now we're counting down the days until the next box arrives in the mail. It is our favorite day of the month, and it is sure to be your child's too. With KiwiCo, you can do your part to encourage your children to be innovators and creative thinkers. They won't believe what they can build and accomplish with KiwiCo. So give them the tools to learn new skills, build new experiences, and make new connections to the broader world. There's something for kids of all ages, and there's no commitment, so you can pause or cancel anytime. Step into spring and celebrate the season of discovery with a KiwiCo subscription. Get 30% off your first month plus free shipping with any crate line with code ARTCURIOUS at KiwiCo.com. That's 30% off your first month at KiwiCo.com. Promo code ARTCURIOUS. This episode of Art Curious is brought to you by BetterHelp. There have truly been times in my life where I've needed some assistance to figure out what I wanted from life and how to find the happiness I deserved. And that's why I turned to BetterHelp. And BetterHelp is here to help you too. With BetterHelp, a professional can assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist with whom you can begin communicating in less than 48 hours. And it is so convenient because you can connect from wherever you are in a safe and private online environment, and you can message, call, or video chat with your therapist, all instead of commuting somewhere and sitting uncomfortably in a waiting room. And BetterHelp also makes it easy to find the right therapist for you. Whether you're looking for help with depression, anxiety, trauma, grief, LGBT matters, self-esteem, or anything, and you don't have to limit yourself to someone who works near your home. Believe me, I've used BetterHelp and it is so easy, and I loved my counselor I connected with. And even if I didn't, it would have been so easy and free to change counselors if I wanted. It's confidential, convenient, professional, and affordable. And financial aid is available. BetterHelp is not a crisis line or a self-help line. It is professional counseling done securely. And check this out. So many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. As an art curious listener, you're important to me. And so I want you to start living a happier life today. By visiting our sponsor, BetterHelp, you'll get 10% off your first month of counseling by visiting betterhelp.com/artcurious. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's at BetterHelp, HELP.com/artcurious.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So circling back around to your mother asking to be more involved in the arts community and to meet with collectors, how did she get involved in starting to support artists, especially German artists? Was there a lightning bolt moment that led to her to make this one of her missions at this point in her life?
I think it was because, well, she saw the how destitute Germany was, but it was when she walked into Hannah Becker's home, floor to ceiling, of expressionist painting, and then heard Hannah Becker's story, how she had protected the expressionist artists in Berlin in the 30s, actually continuing to show their work in her home as a salon. And it's her guest book is phenomenal, how deep it is in all the artists. And then that got to be too hot for her. So she had to go down to Hofheim. Well, mother heard this story, and Hannah really wanted to find these artists that she had supported that had fled the cities and gone to the south of Germany and also to France and Switzerland. So, because she wanted to open up a gallery in Frankfurt to support them. And the armed forces, she would need permission from the armed forces. So mother quickly became sort of a fixer. She would go to the armed forces, make connections for Hannah. She would get papers so that they could travel to the different zones. Germany was broken up into French, British, in American zones and required to have papers. You couldn't just go into a town and go to a hotel. There weren't any hotels. Things were bombed.
Right.
And you might have to, you know, be invited into someone's home. So even to go to Berlin, she had to be invited to go to Berlin. And for that, she used her own network of people back at Yale. She apparently knew the sister of the head of the Monuments Men.
Wow.
Howard. So she asked him to get to find somebody up in Berlin to invite her. And then that's how she managed to get up there. And there she saw how terribly distraught the Germans were. And so she helped. She went to galleries and purchased art that she could. She, from the artists themselves, she purchased their art. She took photographs of their art. And that was sort of became the beginning of that, where she could see that she could make a difference.
I love that. And what I love, too, is that there are several big names in the first half of the 20th century, German artists. So we have people like Otto Dix and Max Pechstein, Erich Heckel and Carl Schmidt Rottluff that she's coming into contact with. So you have amazing, you know, your mother is obviously the main subject of this book, but then the book also opens up the world of so many other people. You know, I'm loath to call them characters because these are real people, but I love how you were able to weave into the narrative their stories to round out the influences that they may have had on your family and also your mother's influences on them as well. I think that was quite incredible.
Well, thank you. I think that was sort of part of the effort also to show, you know, the efforts that the Americans were or were not making to help the artists and how necessary it was for all the players to help rebuild the culture of Germany. And mother, of course, knew enough about German art to also be infatuated with being able to meet these artists in person. And they were very gracious and really respected the fact that she was trying hard to help them. Because the Monuments Men job was to help the art that was stolen from the museums and such,
right,
and not so much even from collections. The art that mother was coming across was more contemporary. As there was some expression, the expressionist art was, you know, literally the Nazis were trying to destroy.
Yes.
Or forbade them to paint. So these characters, not really characters, it was a combination of also painters, not just painters, but also poets, musicians, dancers, the entire art community and singers, opera singers. She was particularly enamored with opera singers and dancers.
One of the things I love about this book is that it is beautifully illustrated. I mean, you have incredible images from not only your family archives, but you have the scans that you're talking about your mother's incredible letters, the works she was able to publish, and then also images and images of the works that so many of these artists that we're talking about had created. How was that process of putting that together? Because you're having to access the lives and works of so many different people. So it wasn't just your family's letters and photographs. Was that especially challenging in trying to put the book together?
Well, it was, I wanted to do that. Yeah, it was challenging for copyright reasons. You can't just put any painting in any book.
Right.
So part of the effort was to find, Artists' Rights Society, I had to pay out a pretty penny for that. But also for the artists that were not at Artists' Rights Society, I would contact and find the children. And that was always been a special connection to make. And then making that connection and getting their permissions. But I really wanted people to see not just the photograph of the artist that my mother met as part of this one particular travelogue to the Bodensee down in southern Germany, but also to see examples of what this contemporary art looked like. So it's more than just portraiture, it's actual the art itself. So especially the monuments men were very particular about the fact that you can't be buying or stealing or undercutting. You have to be honest about your connections and with the artist. So this was a very it's a labor of love. But I'm glad you said that, because I'm hoping that people will get a more sense of the whole era and time and how these people lived and who they were.
That's something that I really enjoyed, was that you also provided us with these little sidebar biographies that allow us to, for example, some of the collectors that might not be household names, or even some artists who might not be household names, that you're able to give us a little quick snippet at whom we're looking at, because that really does expand this as a greater history. And so I'm wondering about what you hope your mother's legacy is. You know, I think this book is not only a wonderful read, but I feel like this is a wonderful historical document. And I would hope that that's something that could be used for future classes or other historians who come around the line.
Great. I thank you for saying that, because that is truly the mission, is that because it's so primary document rich. I mean, it really is her letters and diaries, photographs stitched together with me just writing some background to put things in context. And I do those sidebars because some of these characters are definitely unknown, such as the early director of the Milwaukee Art Museum, Polly Cohn, who worked with Frank Lloyd Wright. She was an amazing person and may never get any light of day in terms of history. So I'm hoping this book becomes a stepping off point for people to might be inspired to come up with other things to write about and such. So, and that's why I included so many primary documents. And also I had a couple other authors write their perspectives, such as the early Wisconsin art in the 1930s. So everybody knows what mother's the genre was like, what she was coming from. And also another art historian in Germany, Dorothea Schirne, about the Americans helping the rebuilding of the arts. So I'm very happy that you said that.
I think it's a really beautiful book, and I would love to get it into the hands of as many people as possible. So where could you tell us where people can find more information and where they can grab copies of this book?
So the archive is a lot of it's digital, and it's on the internet, fontaine.org, fontaine.org. You can buy the book there. You can also go to Amazon and buy it. It's also in Milwaukee at Boswell Books. It's here in Austin at Book People. It's in Book Woman. And buy directly or buy from Amazon. Either way works.
Fantastic. I loved this book. So I want to thank you so much for being here with me today to talk about it, to talk about your family's legacy. And I just appreciate you sharing this knowledge with the world. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this bonus episode featuring Claudia Fontaine Chittister and her latest book, Trusted Eye. We've got another bonus episode dropping in 2 weeks, and then next month, April 22, we will begin our new season of Art Curious. So stay subscribed and stick with me, because there's a lot more coming soon.